Almost live from a very cool corner of Midtown Sacramento, it's the Nate Darling Show with Larry Mead. Now, from one end of his cheap IKEA couch, here's Nate.
And welcome in, welcome back, everybody. To anybody who's listened to the first two podcasts, thank you very much for coming back for a third time. You found the Nate Darling Show. I am Nate, of course, as you heard from the introduction. And Larry is somewhere between here and Minneapolis. He's kind of caught up in a travel issue. So we are going to press on without Larry. With me is my friend Mel. Say hello, Mel.
Hello, Mel.
Mel is many things. A wonderful person. And Mel is also an improviser.
True. It's true.
She is a member of an improv troupe called Lady Business. At the Sacramento Comedy Spot.
That's right. We have a show this Saturday.
This Saturday. So today is the 14th. If you were listening to this before the 16th.
Yeah.
There we go. I'm trying to do the math. I keep thinking it's Wednesday. So if you hear this before the 16th and you're in the Sacramento or Northern California area, you can check out Lady Business at the Sac Comedy Spot. 8 o'clock show?
8 o'clock show.
Excellent. And then more improv after that, too.
That's right.
So that's where I met Larry. That's not where I met you the first time.
No.
But it is it's where we were reacquainted, acquainted.
I didn't remember meeting you. I was too nervous the first time we met.
Well, that happens a lot.
You have that effect on women?
I do, especially when I'm judging.
That's true.
And it was part of... My 58 had a talent, had a host hunt search, and part of my paying career, you know, things I get paid for is working at the TV station, and that was one of the things I had to do. I would say 100 people come through in 2 days, and another 100 people came through my booth in the following weekend. So, and I remembered you from that, and we met at the Comedy Spot when it was down in what I like to call the cozy location.
Yes.
Down on Broadway. Anybody who's feeling historic can go down and visit it. It's the place that has the paper on the inside of the windows.
Still abandoned. And it held what? A host of 30 people at most?
No, we could put 40 in there.
Ooh,
yeah, there were a sold out show was 40, and I think one show was 50 people, but there were people sitting on the floor. It was really kind of a cool vibe though. It was snug. It was. And now the Comedy Spot, for anybody who doesn't know, is on 20th Street between J and K. In the Mars Building. So moving on up to big things. Wasn't going to mention a lot of the Comedy Spot, but hey, I give you a plug.
Yay, so people, thanks.
And thank you for coming in. And actually, the real reason I originally asked Mel to be on the show is there's a lot of stuff going on with women in the news. And I brought Mel here to defend her gender.
I'm not making any promises.
Because I didn't think it was fair to have two guys, even though Larry is out and proud gay, have two guys just go back and forth on this many women-centric issues and talk about it. So I wanted to get a different perspective. So Larry is caught up in travel nightmares. You are originally from Ohio, like Larry.
Yeah.
Do you have any bad travel stories?
I did sleep in Minnesota once in the airport. I got stuck in a snowstorm, and they would not provide any vouchers or anything because they said it was an act of God.
What?
If it was an act of God, it's not the airline's fault, so they can't provide any services if it's not their fault.
Well, they could. They choose not to.
They choose not to if it's an act of God, which apparently snow is.
Sure.
So well, I slept in the airport huddled with two other people because we were afraid our stuff would get stolen. So we took turns and stayed up in shifts and huddled in the airport in Minnesota.
What a terrible refugee story that is.
It was. And I've now since learned to pack things like a toothbrush and clean underwear because I never used to pack that stuff in my bag. I used to just bring like, you know, a book, an iPod. Now I bring toothbrush and underwear and deodorant.
Oh, I've always done that. And it's really been more of a paranoia for another reason. I'm paranoid they're going to lose my luggage.
Yeah.
And the last thing you want to do is get somewhere, find out that they've lost your luggage, and then you've got to go and buy toothpaste, deodorant, and you have no change of it. So it's always a change of underwear, a change of socks, maybe an extra t-shirt, and then toothpaste and deodorant.
Oh, yeah. My brother and his wife had all of their luggage. They went to Indonesia and their luggage went to Africa.
That's not the same place at all for anybody who's bad at geography.
It's not super close. I mean, you can't like drive the stuff over once it's found. So they actually got back to the States about the same time their luggage got back to the States. So they were in Indonesia with nothing.
Wow. That sucks.
Yeah, I did. They had a wedding to go to and her dress and jewelry and shoes and gifts. And yeah, it went to Africa on its own little safari vacation.
Yeah, I don't have anything quite that, but my worst travel story is not really the airline's fault. I mean, I've had some weird airline stuff, but nothing terrible. It was when I came out to Sacramento for my job interview, and I was out here for a couple of days, and they brought me out to dinner for my last night there, and I woke up. I had a 6 a.m. flight, and I'm outside the Hyatt downtown, excuse me, and I'm supposed to have a car come and pick me up, and I woke up at 2 a.m. sick as a dog. You know, the kind where you're sitting on the toilet and you have a trash bucket between your knees, like that.
Shaking the knees.
Right. And I'm outside of the Hyatt. It's like 5 a.m. And I feel terrible, like cold sweat, terrible. And this car is not coming. And I don't have a number to call. It's too early to call any of the people that helped me out. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to suck it up. And I ended up getting on the Big Blue Van, which is really the short bus to the airport. And I got to the airport and went to one of the gift shops and spent a ridiculous amount of money on essentially Alka-Seltzer, Tums, granola, a Coke, and stuff like that. And the flight was Sacramento to Dulles in Washington, D.C. And it was the longest 6 hours of my life.
Oh, I bet.
And I get to Dulles, and I'm afraid of it. I'm thinking I got food poisoning. I've never had food poisoning, but I'm imagining this is what it is.
Welcome to Sacramento.
Because I just felt terrible. So
I call
my future boss, and I go, because I get to Dulles, and it's about 8:30, 8:45 Pacific time then. And I've been up. I've been traveling. I feel like death, and I'm like, how are you feeling this morning? Because we both had steaks at the same place. And he goes, oh, I feel fine. Why? I'm like, because I have never been more sick in my life.
Oh, my God.
So made it from there, then up to Burlington, Vermont, back, got to my car, and drove back, which Burlington to where I lived in Plattsburgh, New York, is an hour drive with a ferry ride in the middle.
Awesome.
So that was my – basically what happened was on the trip out – oh, the trip out was actually bad. That I keep blocking that out of my mind. I came out, flew out the day after Super Bowl Sunday when the Bears lost the Super Bowl. And I flew through Chicago, and it was 20 degrees below zero. And we leave late out of Burlington. We get to Chicago. And I go to my next gate to where I'm supposed to catch the plane to Sacramento, and there's a plane there, but it's not my flight. And it's like a half hour before my flight is supposed to leave. And I'm like, what's going on? And they don't say anything, don't explain anything. And I go up to the counter. I'm like, is this the right place? And they're like, yeah, just wait. And so after my plane is supposed to leave, this other plane backs out, and then another plane comes up, and they announce they let us on the plane. And we're on the plane for about 20 minutes. And finally, the pilot comes on to explain that there is a delay because, and this is way more than I needed to know about any airport. Apparently, there is one company that fuels every single jet at O'Hare Airport. And this company had 80% of their employees call in sick that morning. Because they got drunk watching the Bears lose the Super Bowl, so they were hungover, mad, and it was 20 degrees below zero.
So screw you, man.
Pretty much. Screw the man, is what they said. So my flight into Sacramento got in about 2.5 hours late. So that was my trip out, and apparently on that trip out is where I picked up the bug that manifested itself on the trip back.
Nice. It was marinating.
Yeah, it was. It was soaking in the airplane, if you will.
That's awesome.
Speaking of soaking, and I don't know why, but there's Mormon topics on this show every time.
I love Mormon.
I know, and Larry's fascinated with Mormons, so he's going to be really sad he missed this.
Oh, two of my best friends are Mormons. So.
And Mormons are some of the nicest people you will ever meet.
It's true.
their religion is some of the strangest stuff you will ever hear.
Also true.
And I heard this yesterday on TMZ of all places.
I get my news.
Because they were talking to Jimmer Fredette at the airport, Sacramento King Jimmer Fredette. And it then turned into this discussion of how a BYU player was suspended for having sex with his girlfriend because that's part of the rules there. You can't have premarital sex. And then they were like, well, how do you not have sex before you get married? And then someone found the term soaking, which is a cheat, if you will. And I had never heard of this. I swear to God.
It'd be like the girls who do it in the butt and say it doesn't count.
It's better than that. Oh. It really is. Soaking is the act of a male inserting his penis into the vagina of a female, and then they can't move.
Oh.
So they just start, and then they have to stop. They can't move. They can't wiggle. They can't flinch.
That's just mean.
It's weird. It's odd. I don't know. And I don't know if they have, like, multiple soaking sessions one after the other.
Or, if you have multiple soaking sessions really, really fast,
yeah,
it's like doing it.
It is. But
what's the point? How does that absolve you? Why don't you just do it in your mouth and go really fast, and then you're not having sex, and you're actually, like, enjoying it?
Are you going with the eating ain't cheating argument?
I don't know what you mean.
No, I just found that out yesterday, and I'm like, that is the oddest thing.
It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm going to say right now that that's stupid and makes no sense. Putting it in is penetration. That's sex.
It is.
If you're too stupid to move it around, that's your fault. You're a dummy.
But it's like, aha, listen here, God. I have a technicality on my side.
How is it a technicality? Once you put it in, you've done it. Too late. If you stop, you've stopped. You have to stop before the penis goes in, not once it's in.
You can't
freeze and like be like, do over.
Apparently you can if you're a Mormon.
Okay, that's stupid.
I don't know if I will stop and say this. If you are LDS and you listen to this show,
email Nate and explain.
You're not listening to this show, I know this. But we do have an email address, so this is a chance to mention it. We now have an email address because they're free. It's Nate Darling Show, all one word. I don't know why I say that anymore. It's Nate Darling Show at rocketmail.com. Mel's laughing. And it's Rocket Mail. All it is Yahoo. If you sign up for a Yahoo email address, you have the option of going with the Rocket Mail domain. It sounds awesome. Because Yahoo just like, it sounds like something grandma would have. Or you can send me an email at grandma@yahoo.com. Don't send an email there.
Your rocket.
It's Nate Darling Show at rocketmail.com. If you have any insight to cast on that, or if you have any questions for Larry or myself, because we will answer them in future episodes. So there's that. And speaking of penetration, I and Mel knows nothing about this, so I'm throwing this out there as a wild card. I went to replenish my condom stock. I know it sounds odd, doesn't it? My condom stock at Walmart.
They're not going to replenish themselves.
They're not. They don't buy themselves. And they apparently have stopped making my brand.
Aww,
not my brand, man. But the type. I choose lifestyles, and the kind I had, they don't make anymore. Because I'm like, I'll go to Walmart, and
so
I'll
you're
go.
Really picky about your condoms.
I found one. When you find one you like, that's what you do. I mean, I'm putting my most valued possession, if you will, inside of it.
Oh, yeah.
I want to make sure it's good, and I found one I like. So anyway, I go to Walmart, and I'm looking for the silver box, and there's no silver box. And I'm like, what the fuck now? And so I'm like, all right. And now I've got to linger in front of the condoms, which is what you don't want to do. You don't want to be – you want to go in, go, there it is, grab it, and go. I'm not embarrassed about it, but there's people shopping for deodorant just down the aisle way. And worse, there are other people looking at the lube and personal vibrators that are there. And yeah, it's great that they've made them available to you at the drugstore and at Walmart and all this other stuff, but – just go to the sex shop and get it and quit being so goddamn uptight about it.
But there's creeps at Goldie's.
Well, I'm not saying at Goldie's specifically. You can go to any one of the many fine purveyors of vibrating items in the Sacramento or wherever you might be area. And, of course, you can get stuff online, too. So, anyway, I'm forced to read, and I ended up going with this one. And I don't know what the fuck it is with lifestyles. They've decided to replace letters, like when women started spelling women with a Y, so it wouldn't be W-O-M-E-N. These are, and I shit you not, thin, T-H-Y-N.
Wow.
with new Thintimate technology.
Ooh, Thintimate.
It is
not they have a lisp.
A natural feel and reliable protection. You'll feel more.
Wow.
I think I don't know. There's I haven't broken into these yet, so I can't testify as to their as there is. This box is still sealed with of everything
like a,
that
I'd
came
like a
in.
Full, a full report.
They are 21% thinner, and they are flare shaped. There's a little diagram on the back.
Wow. As oh, though there
you,
is.
So in case you don't know what a flare shape is.
Fancy.
So anyway, there's that.
It's a pretty blue box though.
It is, and it's see through. It's sort of see through. What I don't understand why you would need a plastic see through box. Because all you see are condom wrappers.
It's true. Well, I can totally relate because they changed my tampons for a while.
Right.
And talk about, you know, again, intimate things in or on or whatever. You're
sure.
Putting your penis in that. I put the tampon in me. And you want something you're used to and it's comfortable. And they changed my tampons. And it was very traumatic.
Oh, I'm sure. I can't even imagine. I cannot even imagine. You want to talk about not being – I heard somebody talk about on Facebook that that men can't even remotely understand the idea of birth. I grew up on a farm. I've pulled a calf out of a cow. I can kind of comprehend birth. I cannot comprehend a menstrual cycle to save my life.
That's awesome.
The thought of that happening to my body is both frightening and I cannot imagine being a, 12-year-old girl and having that happen for the first time. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It's a horror show. It is.
It really does explain why teenage girls are kind of skittish about things. Yeah. Because if that happened to me, I'd be frightened for years as well.
Well, so if I become, you know, a raging bitch in the middle of this, you'll know why.
Oh, okay.
It's my excuse. I have PMS.
The built-in excuse. And I'm not going to check.
Quick, Nate, bring me a carton of milk.
The milk.
It'll fix it.
Oh, the milk. The milk, people. And this was one of the things I wanted to have you in for today is I think it was the California Milk Board or some other milk board. Launched a new website this week because they wanted to highlight new research that states that drinking milk can reduce the symptoms of PMS. And for anybody who really suffers from PMS really badly, and I have friends and spouses of friends who like have really, really bad lay in bed because I feel awful PMS, not just I'm kind of cranky PMS, the kind where you're literally physically sick. So that's actually kind of good news, but the website was done very tongue-in-cheek, and I found it amusing, and my inner 15-year-old found it really, really amusing. They have I'm sorry cards on there. One of them is I'm sorry I read in between the wrong lines, and I'm sorry I listened to what you said and not what you meant. And I see the face you're making. It doesn't help in a podcast, but
yeah.
She's pursing her lips. She's angry, which is what the reaction I saw on Facebook and on a lot of sites this week. Now, why is it so bad to make light of something like this?
I think, first of all, my first reflex was Don Draper from Mad Men wrote this. I mean, when was the last time we heard PMS humor? It's archaic and it's stupid. You know, I haven't even heard of a legal case where a woman has claimed PMS for murdering someone. I mean, it's old and unfunny. It's 15-year-old humor.
Right.
It makes the campaign makes men out to be stupid, bumbling retards and women out to be crazy, cunty, psychotic whore bags once a month who will magically be cured by milk. It's offensive to everybody, I think. It's stupid. And I don't think it's really funny. I mean, I get it. And maybe my inner 15-year-old guy, if I have a little bit of that, appreciates their attempted humor. But it's stupid. And it makes us sound, us being women, like we're these crazy, psychotic, unreasonable women. And if you bring us chocolate and candy and flowers and diamonds and a gallon of fucking milk, it'll, you know, calm the savage beast. And it's just stupid.
I will agree on excuse me on this point. As a marketing professional, it is a terrible, terrible campaign, because if your idea is just to build awareness, like this is happening, this is what's going on, we have this new information, everybody knows it now, it falls under the there's no such thing as bad publicity. The Paris Hilton model, if
you
will.
Oh, yeah, everyone's talking about it.
Everybody is talking about it. And if they just put out a press release or something else, or they had, let's say, Dr. Oz come out and said, hey, ladies, have some milk. It might help your PMS symptoms. No one would be talking about it. Nobody would know.
Which is also stupid just in itself, because we put so much hormones and crap into the freaking cows now. Like, really? You think it's not milk. It's hormone stuffed milk anyway. So I don't know that it's really going to be helping all that. I haven't read all the studies, but I think that's probably a kind of a bullshit weak claim that they're making anyway.
Well, I mean, you try.
I drink a shitload of milk, and trust me, so far it hasn't helped. And, you know, I don't get it, but I drink plenty of milk, and I get pretty fucking bitchy, and I'll add milk, but you know. And the other thing is, you fucking show up to my door with a goddamn carton of milk when I have my period, you're gonna get a punch in the face. You know, that is not gonna fix the problem.
See, now you're only reinforcing part of what the website is talking about. There is a kernel of truth in the website and in the advertising that every guy is going to see and go, yeah, I feel that. There is just that little kernel, which is, I saw it and I just laughed because I'm like, this is just stupid. Because it really is. It's not. It's trying to get a serious message out in a humorous way, but again, that was my other thing. You mentioned a Mad Men reference, and it did. It really sort of brought that back. It's all techie and slides around and looks really new age, but it's got that 1960s mentality to everything.
It really does.
So I don't know. I just found that very, very interesting.
It makes everybody look kind of crazy. It makes men look stupid. Like, really, you're that afraid of, we're that terrifying and psychotic, and
yes.
Men don't, oh, come on.
No, it's true. Because when you're with somebody, and if you're with somebody and you know that they are affected by PMS, you act very differently around them when it starts to happen, because you don't want to do or say that one thing that's going to set that off.
Don't you guys know that's all the time, though? That's just women?
No.
PMS,
but
maybe magnifies it. But men are dumb.
That's it.
You guys say stupid shit all the time.
Of course we do.
And
that.
Everything's going to set us off.
Right. And, well, that's part of the whole dynamic.
So bring us candy, chocolate, milk, and diamonds all the time, and then everyone's a winner.
Well, that's the problem with men and women anyway, because men say stupid things and women get angry at us. And women say have sort of a circular logic to things that is incredibly frustrating, and that's sort of the battle of the sexes that goes on, and it's not a right and wrong thing. That's just the way two very similar but very different beasts deal with each other. It is that. I mean, honestly, you can go, oh well, people are people, and blah, blah. Yes, men and women are different. I'm sorry.
It's true.
I absolutely sorry. There is no man alive who's straight. There might be a really, really gay guy somewhere who has a super developed feminine side, but there's no straight dude who has ever had a good cry. That does not exist ever anywhere in nature.
You've just ruined a fantasy for a lot of women who believe there really is that Renaissance sensitive, sweet, yet really hunky, studly dude that can fix stuff and change your oil, but it's still okay crying in a movie. We all want that.
No. I'm not talking about if something touches you. There are guys that will cry if something touches them on an emotional level. I'm talking about a guy. There is no guy who's going to go and get really angry about something and then start crying because they're angry. Okay. That idea to a guy is the most out of this world thing. It's as crazy as thinking I could get my period. It is that absolutely, because guys, when we get angry and frustrated, we want to punch something, we want to pummel something, we want to do something physical like that. That's how we get that. All it is a release of tension, but that's how guys do it. And sometimes it comes out with alcohol, the getting out of tension, which brings me to the death in Davis on picnic day. It was an off-campus right. thing. And in Davis, California, for anybody who's out of town, because we have a lot of out-of-town listeners, guy gets punched in front of his house, falls to the ground, and dies. Well, it turns out they ruled it a homicide yesterday, and no one is going to be charged. And the reason no one's going to be charged is
right? There's no criminal intent?
There was no intent, but what happened was this guy's friend, and they've been friends for a long, long time, and they had been out drinking, and apparently the guy who is dead said, "Punch me in the face, dude." come on, punch me in the face.
A girl would never do that.
Exactly. Yeah. Women don't understand that at all. But there are guys that when they get drunk, they just start this. They just start wanting to punch each other in the face. It's a weird thing. It's a little bit beyond me. I think it's more when you're in your early 20s and you're a guy and you introduce alcohol to stuff, it just gets absolutely insane the stuff we'll do because our brains have no idea what to do with what we can do. And so this guy is like, punch me in the face, punch me in the face. And his friend punched him in the face and he severed an artery in his neck and fell to the ground and he died.
Solid punch.
Or there was something going on. But I always find this really weird. When I was a kid, I don't ever remember hearing about, and I'm sure it happened every now and then, but I don't remember hearing about people who fell 3 feet to their death. And I hear about that a lot. It's like something that you wouldn't think would be very harmful at all. And someone gets killed, someone gets paralyzed. And I just don't recall hearing of that ever when I was a kid. When I was a teenager, I had a cousin who dove off of a bridge into a river, which happens a lot around here. This is back in Vermont. And for whatever reason, and everybody knew on this river, if you dove off one side of the bridge, the water was deep. And if you dove off the other side, there were rocks. And for whatever reason, and no one will ever know the answer to this, and I think he was 15 when he died, he dove on the side with the rocks and hit his head and broke his neck. It's just weird because it just goes so quickly. You would hear about stuff like that every now and then, but you never heard somebody was climbing over a 3-foot fence. They lost their footing and they fell and died. It's odd. I don't know if people are getting more fragile or if we're just hearing about it more, because in the 70s and 80s, if that happened, you'd be very hush hush about it. Like, oh, come on, please don't.
I think stuff like that too wasn't news back then. Just like, you know, people joke about all the dangerous stuff we did as kids that nobody thought was dangerous. I never wore a bike helmet.
No.
My mother made dinner. She cut the chicken on the board, and then she cut the vegetables on the board.
Right.
And then, you know, she prepared everything on the board, and she put it on the plate. We never died of salmonella. We never got food poisoning. It just – and I don't know. Maybe we're more fragile, but I think it was just stuff wasn't such a big deal now, and everything's in the news, and there's so much social media, and there's so much reporting on everything, and everything gets sensationalized, and we find it so exciting. And I think people were always probably dying from 3-foot walls, but nobody cared. I mean, you know, I'm sure I feel bad for that person in particular, but in general, nobody really – cared. Oh, and on a side note about something you said earlier, the other thing women will never do besides have a punching contest is competitive eating with each other. We do not understand why guys are like, I can eat more chicken wings than you.
That's not true. There was a woman in the competitive eating contest, and she's mad now. She was in the Nathan's hot dog eating contest on the 4th of July, and she is not getting credit for eating her 24 hot dogs. She ate 24. She's only getting credit for one because she left a mess in front of her. I don't know what the mess was. I can't watch that stuff. I cannot for the life of me sit and watch people just jam stuff down their hole.
I get the competitive stuff because I did watch a woman eat pats of butter once, which I just it was this most disgusting thing ever. But in general, like at a bar or out with your friends, girls are never going to do that.
No, probably not.
And guys do it all the time. It's such a weird male thing. Like, I can eat more pizza than you. Okay.
Guys will do very strange things it's all part of, if you really want to go back to the whole genetic makeup and the whole, I mean, honestly, we're all animals. We are all animals, and that's just
to breed with the best female, you got to eat the most chicken wings
or to exert your dominance over the group you're in. I mean, you want to be, not everybody does, but that's where that comes from. You get a bunch of guys who want to be the dominant guy, and that's why you have punch me in the face contests, and that's why you have eating contests, and that's why you have the, hey dude, I bet I can beat you back to the car foot races when you're drunk. I can do a keg stand longer than you can.
Yeah, I'll do that.
So, no, I mean, but you do very different things. Women are just as competitive with other women, but in completely different ways, and it's subtle. So that if you're not really paying attention, especially as a guy, you'll miss it. It's a weird, like almost like bird watching. I think that's why the British call women birds. Because you will see a group of women, and if you just look on the surface, it looks like they're very just normally interacting, and there's a lot going on there. And I think like the Real Housewives shows is how people are starting to realize what that is, because it's not just women. Gay guys will do that with each other too. And Larry and I have talked about this, how sometimes the whole bitchiness factor sort of goes over to that side too, where it's not just guys don't get bitchy with each other normally. We just don't. It doesn't exist. I might punch a guy. I might go, fuck you, dude, and walk off. And then, you know, time will go by and we'll go, yeah, I'm sorry, whatever. And then we're fine. It doesn't turn into that sort of mental wearing down that goes on in a group of women.
Yeah, we just keep throwing out the what size my jeans are and how expensive they are. And then the one with the bigger ass and the cheaper jeans goes home and has a good cry.
Right. So it's just as savage and barbaric, but it's done with the mind. So it's actually crueler.
Psychological warfare.
Because my bruise will heal, and I might be able to go, oh yeah, that still hurts. Well, that's kind of stupid.
My scars are deep.
Yeah, and now with Facebook and stuff like that, that's really where the bullying thing. I mean, yeah, there's always been bullying. But when you went home at night, you escaped the bullying. Now, the bullies sort of follow you through Facebook and everything else, and it becomes really bad, especially for women and especially for gay teenagers who are more likely to take that stuff to heart. And there are male teenagers, straight male teenagers, who will do the same thing. They get sensitive because as a teenager, you don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And the new marketing message to LGBT teens, it gets better.
Dan Savage, love him.
It gets better. That message needs to go out to every teenager.
Oh yeah.
Not just LGBT, to every teenager. It gets better because as a teenager, you have no fucking idea what you're doing, where you're going, how it's going, no matter how much you think you do, because I kind of thought I did, but I had no clue. No fucking clue at all. And for the only people for whom it won't get better are the really good athletes who think that they're going pro, so they don't even bother to study. For you, it's not getting better. You have peaked at 16, 17 years old. You're the most popular kid at school. You are great. You are the king of the campus, but you are dumb as a post, and you are going to be delivering something to somebody, and you are peaking. So maybe you crack a book. Maybe you pay attention a little bit, a little less bro dog stuff and a little bit more Keats. And, you know, kind of figure out what's going on.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, who's running the world? Freaks and geeks.
Yeah.
All of us that were counterculture growing up, now we're the ones, and you athletes, you work for me.
And I was a high schooler. I was on the high school baseball team. I was on the high school basketball team. And, I mean, I went to a small Catholic school, so we didn't have the guy who was going to the – we did not have the Ontario Smith to pull a local Sacramento dude into the mix who from all reports of Ontario Smith, he played in the NFL for a little while. And he is most famous not for his playing but for getting caught with something called the original Wizenator. And for anybody who doesn't know what the original Wizenator is, it's a fake penis and bladder that you wear on your person, and you put urine in this, clean urine, so that you can pass a drug test. So that you can pass it. And dude had failed a drug test or two.
At first when you said clean urine, I'm like, I don't get it. What do you mean? How do you clean your urine? Do you like scrub it with a little...
You get somebody who doesn't do drugs. You get
non-drug. I got clean. I'm not that. I'm with you now.
Well, some people might not know. So that's what this guy is most famous for. And I ran into somebody who, through circles here in town, who not only knows him and, you know, he's peaked. I'm not going to go into any detail about it. Basically, and he could have a renaissance. He's not going back to the NFL because he's in his 30s now, and running backs in their 30s are done in the NFL. Yeah. There's a really short shelf life. But Ontario Smith has peaked. Now, Ontario peaked way higher than most bro dogs will. Most bro dogs aren't getting to the NFL. Most of them, if they're lucky, will play a little college ball if they can get in. But yeah, pick up a book for God's sake. Maybe there pay attention a little bit.
When I was in college, when I was actually a student in college, there was a guy that was he had been the high school basketball star from wherever he was, and he got a scholarship to my university. And I tutored him and realized it was hopeless. He was, clearly not going anywhere academically. And he graduated. No, he didn't graduate. He was still playing for the school. I must have been older than him. And I became a police officer, and I was a police officer in town. And then I spent his last year of his career and the first or second year of my career arresting him over and over and over again. I just thought, the worm has turned, my friend. And I think he wound up doing a year in the NBA, and that was sort of it. I think he's still getting arrested a lot.
That will happen. That will happen. So basically what I'm saying is, if you're a teenager and life isn't going great, or if you're a parent of a teenager or an uncle or an aunt of a teenager, just take him aside and let him know, hey, it sucks now. It's rough now. Once you're an adult, things are going to be kind of cool. Yeah. I mean, it'll all make sense.
And embrace them, whoever they are. Freak, geek, weirdo. It's okay.
Or captain of the football team.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter, because everybody who's a teenager is insecure about something.
Yep.
Everybody who's an adult is insecure about something,
insecure.
Too.
Oh, I'm
my
still
God.
Waiting for the kids from high school who called me horsehead to come back and haunt me on Facebook. I have a very horsey head.
Wow. That's unfortunate.
I'm still traumatized. I also like to think I have sexy high cheekbones.
You do. You have a very... a very exotic look, Mel.
Thank you.
See, that's
now I feel better.
There you go. Speaking of things that will frighten you and haunt you, last year a neighborhood exploded in San Bruno, California, out in the Bay Area. It was news everywhere, and PG&E gas line exploded. And
you know that happened here in Carmichael not so long ago too, and an entire apartment complex blew up.
And there was a house in Rancho Cordova, too.
Yeah.
That had, I think, on a Christmas Eve a couple of years ago. So, anyway, and now PG&E is sort of contesting, saying, it wasn't us. It might have been the homeowners. That's another story aside. But about a week or so ago, I get this letter from PG&E on their PG&E stationery.
Yes.
And I open it up. It says, neighbor or current occupant.
You might explode at any moment.
Dear neighbor, in the months since the San Bruno natural gas pipeline accident, Pacific Gas and Electric Company has taken many steps to avoid the recurrence of that tragedy. Thanks. As part of our commitment to public safety, PG&E's highest responsibility, we are working to ensure that customers, neighbors, public officials, and first responders have information we can all use to prevent accidents or respond to emergencies. And that's fine. Okay. And here's where it gets to the crap your pants section. Because our records show your home or business is located within 2,000 feet of a gas transmission pipeline, I am writing to make you aware of some relevant safety information. And then, so that you don't completely shit your pants, they make this next line in bold. While this doesn't require any special action on your part, we hope you'll find the information helpful. Don't panic. But
you
could
blow up.
Yeah, you don't know. And then there's a brochure that they enclosed. I don't know what I did with it. It's a shiny brochure.
I mean, what do they tell you? How do you prevent yourself from being blown up?
Basically, sniff around for natural gas. Honestly, and if you smell anything odd, call and report it. So and the outside of the envelope, it looks like any normal thing, except there's a big yellow bar. And it says, important gas pipeline safety information. Please open immediately. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh, my God.
My neighborhood's going to blow up.
That's awesome. I'll say a prayer for you tonight, my friend.
Well, what's funny is I mentioned that at work, and they're like, huh. And then the next day, like, eight people came in with the same letter. I'm like, ah.
See, now I feel jealous because I didn't get one. And that apartment complex that blew up was right around the corner from my house. The boom was so intense that I thought someone had actually driven their car into my garage door, and I went running outside to make sure my garage door was intact.
Apparently, you live 2,001 feet away from a natural gas pipeline. So you won't explode. You'll singe a little bit around the edges, but you won't actually explode. Oh, boy. This next thing, and this is really what I wanted a lady's perspective on. I know we talked about the PMS thing. But that's all silliness. That's all in jest. No one's really getting harmed from that, other than maybe a hurt feeling here or there. For anybody who missed this, in Garden Grove, California, which is just a stone's throw from the happiest place on earth, Disneyland, a 48-year-old woman made dinner for her husband a few nights ago.
Estranged husband.
Right. He filed for divorce. Right. She actually did not live in the apartment. This is what I've learned since the original report. She didn't actually live in the apartment anymore. She had another place. She made dinner for him. He didn't feel well. He went in to take a nap. When he woke up from his nap, he was naked, tied to the bed at all four corners, and she was cutting off his penis with a 10-inch kitchen knife.
I bet right before the cutting off of the penis part, it seemed pretty exciting.
Well, no, he was out for that part. He woke up as she was in the act of severing his penis.
I wonder what was running through his head right at that moment.
Everything. I guarantee you, literally everything was running through his head. Like,
I mean, can you imagine right now? Can you put yourself in that position of just having your penis ripped off of your body?
No. No, and I won't. And you're laughing, and that's why we're having this conversation. Because it's not funny. And so we're not done. She cuts his penis off with a 10-inch kitchen knife, then goes to the kitchen, throws his penis in the garbage disposal.
Hey, if she can't have it, no one else can.
And flips the switch on. Ooh. Flips the switch on.
It doesn't work if you don't turn it on.
Yeah. And this guy is...
I wonder if she ran cold water, because my mom always said when you run the disposal, you just run a little cold water so it doesn't overheat.
Yeah, that's really the important part of the story, Mel. And then we come to the only thing that she did that is humane in this whole story. She called 911 for a medical emergency.
It wasn't humane. She didn't want him to bleed to death. She wanted him to live just like that.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't a humane, I'm going to save your life thing.
No, if she hadn't called, he would have bled to death. What would have been the fun in that for her?
Oh, it's even worse than I thought. See, and that's the perspective I'm looking for. Because when this story came out, every woman I saw talking about and it came out, we found out about it at work, and it was, the guys were, of course, were noticeably horrified by it, and all of the women had smiles on their face, and they were giggling about it, and on Facebook, the comments were like, well, blah, 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 I wonder what he did to deserve it, and I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, you crazy bitches? Oh my God! It's not okay to mutilate people.
I mean, and now he can't like do porn or anything.
No, it's not a John Wayne Bobbitt thing.
No.
And the neighbors were like, we had no idea they were separated. We never heard him fighting, never heard anything. And so now she is facing aggravated mayhem and torture charges. And the aggravated mayhem could lead her to life in prison, which for someone as angry as she is, probably just fine with her. But,
Her defense is going to be spousal abuse and PMS.
Well, that's the other thing, is there was at first the giggling of and then came the, well, I wonder what he did to deserve it. You know what? I don't know, other than physically abusing your spouse in a similar way, I don't know of what you could do to deserve that, honestly. I mean, if somebody's mean to you, says terrible things to you, cheats on you, whatever, leave. Get out. Whatever. Don't tie them to the bed after you drug them and cut off parts of their body.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely of the school of thought that I don't play those games. I've never thrown a boyfriend's stuff out in the front yard. I've never cut up their clothes. I don't believe in violence. I don't buy into any of that. So while it's, you know, from a safe distance away from those people in their lives, it's easy to make jokes and humor and assume that she was in some way abused. At the end of the day, that's crazy shit to do to somebody, and nobody deserves it. I mean, I'm sorry if he's – whatever he did to you, no matter how horrible it is, there's a system in place to deal with these things, and you want to be a vigilante, then you'll go to prison.
For life, maybe. But that was what really took me back, and I never even considered for a moment the thought that she called 911 to save his life so that he would have to live without his penis. That never even crossed my mind.
I'm glad I could be here to help.
Not for one freaking second did that cross my mind.
Women are, women are vindictive, and we want to really relish the pain we inflict, whatever it may be. And we don't like people to get off lightly if we're going after them. And I would imagine, I mean, if I was going to not that I would ever do that, but, you know, if I was going to hurt somebody, you know, it makes me remember the movie. I mean, this is a funny example. The movie, the Princess Bride, mm-hmm. and at the end of it, when he's threatening him to the pain, and he said he's going to cut off his arms and cut off his lips and cut off his nose, but he's going to leave his ears so he can hear the screams of the children. Women are like that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So
killing someone, it's too good for them.
So a little like Vlad the Impaler.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, I just put you on a pike out there. Not so that you die immediately, but so that I could be entertained by your screams of pain.
And send a message.
For days. Yeah, that is so fucked up. That is fucked up on 16 different levels. And you know, kind of the first talking about it with guys, it's like if a guy did anything, and this happens a lot. I mean, way more the other way, where guys do horrible things to women. And it's all wrong. You should never hurt anybody physically that way. And you probably should never emotionally do it either, intentionally. You have fights, things are said, shit happens. But if you're intentionally inflicting that sort of pain and damage, you're fucked up, you have problems, go talk to somebody. And a lot of, and some of the message boards on some of the news sites, there were some women who were like, well, guys do this to women all the time. You just don't like it when it's on the other foot. What the fuck kind of logic is that?
Crazy.
I know your dad probably did horrible things to you or Uncle Al or whomever, but Jesus Christ.
Let's not perpetuate the cycle of
violence. You doing, you know, rooting on some woman who did it, it doesn't solve the problem. In Seattle a couple weeks ago, there was a crazy motherfucking guy, and he broke into his ex-girlfriend's apartment and kicked in the door, and you probably heard this story, mm-hmm. kicked in the door, chased her down, pinned her down, and shaved her head because he didn't want her to be attractive to any other guys. Now, that's a shitty thing to do. It's a horrible thing to do. It's a traumatizing thing to do. But at the end of the day, her hair is going to grow back. Because she's a woman, that trauma will carry with her a long, long time. But this guy's penis ain't growing back.
Nope.
And no matter, and this was the most sad and horrible thing to me was the police recovered parts of the penis from the disposal and brought them to the hospital. And I'm like,
who got to stick their arm down the disposal for that?
I appreciate the effort, guys, but good God. I know it wasn't the female officer on. She's like, I'm not going in there. And you mentioned earlier you were a cop.
Yes.
For a while.
Yes, I was.
What was the most fucked up thing that you ever saw? And obviously don't use any names or whatever. But what was the most fucked up thing that you ran across, whether it be a crime scene or a crime that somebody did to somebody else?
I think there was two things that were very traumatizing for me, and then there was one that was the most messed up crime scene, but by then I'd been doing it for quite a few years, and I had that gallows humor pretty set in,
right?
And so I just found it disturbingly funny. My first couple weeks on the job, I got a call to a guy that had been using a table saw without proper safety.
Of course
equipment.
He was.
And when I got to this, and I was like literally like a rookie cop, maybe 2 or 3 weeks in on the street on my own without a training officer. When I got out into the field, the guy had like a piece of wood sticking straight out of his head like a unicorn.
Oh, God.
And I just thought like, I'm not equipped for this. Like, what am I supposed to do? I turned into my mother. I was like, well, sit down and put pressure on it, honey. Like, I don't know. Like, I didn't know. That was very traumatizing just because I felt completely not equipped to deal with that. All I could do was call for help and wrap a t-shirt around his unicorn horn and hope for the best. So that was upsetting. I also, later on in my career, I was more of a senior officer, and I responded to a call with another officer. When we got there, two officers had gotten there ahead of us and were doing CPR on a young teenager. And they'd been doing it for a while. And when we got there, I went and sort of jumped in to see if I could help and realized that this kid was really dead.
Oh.
But once you start CPR, you can't stop. And these officers didn't realize that they had started CPR on a corpse.
Yeah, there was no bringing him back.
He was dead.
And you have to keep it up until the EMTs show
exactly.
up? Okay.
He has to be declared. And so I turned to the sergeant and I just sort of said, like, don't say anything. Like, if they find out that he's dead, they're going to freak out.
Right.
And one of the officers went out for quite a while. He was really traumatized when he did eventually find out after the fact that he had been doing CPR on a corpse. And that was very traumatizing for them. For me, it was more it was sort of horrific to know what they were doing and to feel so bad for them. And I mean, God bless them. They were doing their jobs. They just didn't take the time to check for vitals and do what they needed to do before they started because they were so anxious to try to save a life.
Right.
That it was just, I mean, he was long, very long dead.
Now let me ask you this, because cops are known for their horrible, horrible humor and cruelty to other cops. Did anybody leave like a 2x4 on their desk with a note say, please resuscitate me and return me?
In that case, because it was so traumatic for these really young cops, they didn't. But we went on a call where there was a kid who was trying to do, like, my understanding is like death by cop. Unfortunately, you know, I worked in like Mayberry.
Right.
And it was a very small town. Apparently we drove by this guy with a shotgun all night, but nobody even noticed him. Poor guy, bless his little heart. Nobody was there to help him die by cop because we were too stupid to see him.
A guy with a shotgun? He's probably just going hunting.
With a shotgun sitting in front of a mental hospital on the grass next to a tree. And nobody saw him. So eventually I guess he got bored and tired of waiting. And so he did it himself.
Oh, well, I guess if you're going to do it, that's really the best way.
And I still have a really clear image in my head of what the remains were, because it was like a perfect nose and mouth and chin, but nothing above it. Everything was gone. It was just sheared off.
Wow.
Cleanly. And I remember there was an ear and some scalp kind of just off to the side on the ground. And we went up there and I had to sit there and work the scene. But then we went up a couple days later, and there was still brain in the tree. And I remember taking sticks, and we were all plucking out hunks of brain and chasing each other with it and thinking it was hilarious. And I'm really sorry. Like, if that kid's family somehow is listening to this many years later, if you can even figure out who I am, where I'm from, and what I'm talking about, I apologize. But I did pick your son's brain out of a tree with a stick, and I did chase someone with it.
Oh, that is awesome. Now, I know – it's because I know cops – And when you work in law enforcement or fire guys are the same way, because you see so much stuff. It's very similar when you work in an environment around news, because we hear all the stuff that the cops and the firemen go to. We hear about it.
Yeah.
We hear about the stuff that goes on. And if you think the news is gruesome, you have no idea. No idea. I mean, if you had any idea how gruesome the world was, it would be like, I'm out. I'm not going to do it.
That's why I won't breed. I'm not bringing kids into this. It's just mean.
So if some gay people call you a breeder, you'll take offense to that?
I am not a breeder, people.
Okay.
And I do. I'm morally opposed. My boyfriend is fixed, and we are safe.
So you don't have any need for thin with a Y then?
No, we're good.
Okay.
We're good.
the other thing that came out this week was the J.C. Dugard book, speaking of horrible, horrible stuff. And this is kind of a heavy pod. There's a little bit of humor mixed in, but this is a really dark this is a really dark show. And that's, you know, that's fine.
I bring the trauma.
Well, you know what, the world is black and white and gray and all sorts of other colors. And did you see the J.C. Dugard interview?
I saw some of it.
Okay. I watched the whole thing.
She handled herself beautifully, by the way.
I cannot believe how she is able to handle it. And I get it. On an intellectual level, I get it. That she – and she said this. If I am mad or I am upset, then he still has control of me. And I'm not going to let him have control of me for one more minute.
One of the things I really liked that she said, and I can really relate to it. When I was – little, my mom died, and everyone kept doing that bullshit thing of like, you're so strong, and how are you surviving, and how are you doing it? And you're like, what the fuck? Like, I can either kill myself or not kill myself. You keep living because you don't have a choice. It's just reality. And I remember, it was Diane Sawyer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was interviewing, and she said, like, I can't imagine. And Jay-Z turned around and was like, I can't remember what she said. I can't imagine being bludgeoned to death with a baseball bat.
Right.
You know, it's like, it just is what it is. It was my life. I mean, I can't make you understand it any more than I can make you understand, you know, getting eaten by wild coyotes. I mean, I guess, why don't you go out, Diane, and get kidnapped for a couple years and raped, and then you'll know. I mean, it just is, and you don't survive by any other reason, because it's the opposite of dying. You either live or you die.
Right. Whenever you're put into a situation, and it doesn't matter what the situation is, hers was an incredibly extreme situation. And you talk about wilderness survival. You talk about, for some people, hell, it's as simple as going to the grocery store. You do what you have to do to get through whatever experience it is you're going through.
Yeah.
That's what life is. Now, in this case, it's a super, super extreme case of it. And the special on TV, they really glossed over a lot of the details. And all of the details are in the book.
Yeah.
And from some of the people I've talked to who've read a little bit of the book, they're like, oh, my God, it is in super graphic detail. And they're like, how can anybody want to read this detail? And here's what I will say from my perspective, because I spent a lot of time as a teenager reading a lot about World War II and Germany in particular and the war effort and the concentration camps and all this other stuff. And the reason that people want to find out about it, because somebody referred to it as a guidebook for pedophiles, which I see their point, but I disagree on this level. I think it's important for people to really look at just how dark and horrible people can be, to understand on a really molecular level how fucked up, evil, and terrible these people are that are going to prison for that and for things like that, and to understand that, oh, well, they're going off to prison and prison needs to be humane and they need to be rehabilitated and all this other stuff. You have to treat people with a humanity, even in prison. There needs to be some sort of level of that. State mandated. But if you don't really get in and pull back the curtain on the details and see the horrific details that go into these crimes, it becomes very easy for especially my liberal friends, but also some conservative friends, it becomes really easy to sort of go, oh, well, that sentence is pretty harsh. Or Nancy Garrido's lawyer was like, well, I don't understand why you give her 34 years. Then the fucking tape comes out and you hear the details about how she is the one who was in the backseat of the car with her knees on a little girl as they were kidnapping her. She was the one videotaping this sick motherfucker playing guitar and zooming past him to film little girls in a playground. And she was the one who was in the front seat of the van telling him, giving him play-by-play of, oh, there's some girls coming out the sliding doors here, so he could videotape them from the back of the van. The dude was a sick motherfucker, and she was just as sick. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what the excuse is of she loved him, she was brainwashed, fuck you. She can rot in jail until she dies.
Amen.
I don't care. In fact, she is – not only is she as bad, in some ways she's worse because he went to jail for 2 years for a parole violation. And that heartless cunt – and I'm going to say it again – heartless cunt kept that little girl chained up in the backyard while he was gone. That is your chance to go, hey, my husband that you've put in jail for a parole violation –
he's a sick fucker.
He's a sick fucker. Kidnap this girl in the backyard. I mean, and she just let it go on. Let it happen. And for – people talk about mother's intuition and all this other stuff. And it, some of it's whatever bullshit or whatever. But I don't care. If you're a human being and you're seeing that happen and you know it's happening and he was videotaping himself having sex with this little girl, anybody who thinks any mercy should be exacted upon these people, I disagree, and I could not disagree anymore. And it's you know, they provided the evidence. There was going back to the World War II thing really quickly, because this is an upbeat conversation. There was I believe it's the World at War series that I watched, and it was in black and white. It was a British thing, and I remember the concentration camp part, and I remember this. I will remember this line forever. And they're showing the pictures from the concentration camp. And the line was, like tourists in hell, they took pictures. And that will stick with me forever, because it was just a – no one would ever – and there are people that deny the Holocaust to this day. There's photographic evidence. There is a gazillion pieces of evidence of the atrocities that went on. And there are still people that go, I don't know. Yeah, I don't buy it. I don't get it. I really don't get it.
Yeah. Preaching to the choir. I'm a Jew, and it makes me sad.
I If you're a human being,
it just baffles my mind.
If you're a human being, it should make you sad, really.
I spend a ton of time. You know, my job now involves a lot of time in courtrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm horrified, A, by what human beings do to other human beings. And I'm horrified more by our judicial system in this country. It is disappointing and it is inadequate. And California is particularly gross, in my opinion. You know, the juvenile system here is a joke and inadequate. And right now we don't even have any services, really. I mean, they closed down, you know, the boys' ranch is gone. The youth center is gone. There's nowhere to put kids. There's no way to rehabilitate them. You know, it's just, it's inadequate. And the sentences could never be enough in my mind because there's no real consequences. We're not teaching anybody. We're putting them away in boxes and then we're letting them back out again.
And there's something going to the legislature to eliminate the death penalty. They want to put the elimination of the death penalty on the ballot, which they're like, well, the death penalty is expensive. And I'm like, yeah, the death penalty is expensive because we don't execute anybody in California.
We'll let them appeal and appeal.
Well, it's not just that. Even the people that have exhausted their appeals, they did some stuff so that it was inhumane to give the lethal injection, and some doctor objected to that. And my thing is like, import a doctor from Texas. There's plenty there with absolutely no compunction about doing it. And if you think that the death penalty is costing us too much money, here's a solution. We have overcrowding. How about we do this? We go to death row, to every prison that has a death row, and we just take out everybody on death row. Just go, you know what? We're going to execute your sentence right now. Right now. I mean, if you're just in and you've still got some appeals, fine. You get your appeals. But these guys that have been there, the guys that were sentenced to death and then got commuted to life imprisonment, like Charles Manson, clean them out. Clean them out. Get them out.
And I know people want the system to be perfect. I mean, mistakes are made. Innocent people are found guilty. Guilty people walk free. But, you know, there has to be consequences. Real solid consequences. I mean, remember the case way back when about the kid that was in, where was he? Singapore or somewhere, spray painting, and they caned him publicly?
Yes. Yep.
He was from near where I grew up.
Nice.
I bet you $1 million he's never spray painted one fucking thing.
No. I guarantee he's not.
You know, our juvenile hall is so overcrowded. I guarantee if there was actual consequences that kids would stop committing crimes. We have crime rings now where they send the kids in because they know we don't do anything to kids.
Right.
You know, it's crazy. There's no – I remember a kid not doing some condition of his, like, work project or something, and the judge saying, well, I'm going to lock you back up. And the kid said, fine. I'll get regular meals. There's air conditioning. There's TV. Perfect.
Right.
It's summer. It's hotter than fuck. Send me back in. I'm not cleaning up the road. And the judge, what can he do?
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? Send it. Well, you could do
you
what
know,
they
I like
did.
To put him over my fucking knee. That's what I'd like to do. You know?
Actually, the best. You should do what they did to Lindsay Lohan. Sentence him to house arrest. You get house arrest.
Except
you don't live in Venice on the beach.
Yeah.
So you don't get to go out on your third floor balcony and look out at the ocean and chill out with your feet up with the bracelet.
And there's two sides to it. And you know, anyone listening is just like with anything else we've talked about today, anybody can look at anything and have the opposite point of view and come in from the other side because nothing's perfect. And yeah, these kids don't become criminals out of a void. And yes, they need help. And yes, they need service. But I also think, you know, and yes, they need better parenting. And yes, they need better education. And yes, these things are all inadequate. But I think if there were real consequences for actions in this country and we didn't have so much legal red tape and we just dealt with it, you do something, you're punished. You know, if you're found beyond a reasonable doubt guilty of this crime, you're punished in a real, physical, solid way.
Yeah, and you get your appeal. You get your appeal if there's new evidence, if there's a change of something. Absolutely. I'm not for taking away appeals or looking back at cases where something should be looked back at. But you're absolutely right. There needs to be some sort of teeth to what you're doing. It's and I'll circle this around to kids, and this is going to be sort of the last thing. We'll wrap it up on this. There was an opinion article on CNN.com, I think, and the title of the article was "Curb Your Brats," and very harsh title because you want to grab people's attention, whichever side it's on. And basically his point was, He had two things. One, don't bring your little kids who you know can't behave to an adult establishment to run around and then get all upset if someone gives you the stink eye. because that's not really a place for kids. His other point was, if you bring your kids out anywhere and they're running around and they're being ridiculous, and kids are going to be kids, and you have to understand that they're going to have their moments. But as a parent, you know your kids. You know what you've done with your kids all day. And you know, oh, they're going to have a ton of energy. Maybe we don't bring them to Applebee's or wherever to run around the whole place. And his whole point was, if your kid's out of control, wherever they might be, get them under control.
Or leave.
Or leave.
Don't expect everybody else to be accommodating.
And I remember when I was a kid, there was a couple of times when I would throw a fit, because that's what kids do. Kids do stuff. Kids don't know any better. That because they're kids, they're learning. They're testing boundaries. They're doing whatever. And I remember doing something like that, and my mother saying, "If you don't stop that, we're going to go to the car and we're leaving. We're in the grocery store, like weeks grocery shopping." And I didn't stop doing it because I wanted some cereal or whatever. I don't know what it was. And we left. She left the cart full of groceries there, brought it up to the front, said, "I'm sorry, I have to go. I can't take these." We went back in the car, and we went home. I didn't get my thing, didn't get any groceries. We went back home. When we got back home, there was a consequence. I don't remember what it was. It wasn't that big a thing. But the bigger consequence to what happened at that moment was, I'm not taking you grocery shopping until you can behave yourself in a public place. And that was the huge punishment. It was, you know, you talk to people and they're like, "Well, you shouldn't hit your kids. You shouldn't spank your kids." You don't have to spank your kids. It's nice to have that as a threat in certain situations. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't. I don't beat your kids. But the taking away of the privilege or the whatever is that motivation that you need to be able to behave or else this is going to happen. And fast forward to now, I go to Walmart to buy, you know, some groceries, like the dry goods and stuff like that. So I'm in the Super Walmart a lot, and I will see couples with their kids, and their kids are going nuts. And there's two people there. It's not one person like it was with my mom. It was two people there. And I just want to go, "One of you assholes, take your out of control kids and go sit in the motherfucking car for 20 minutes and wait." But no, they're running around everywhere, and you've got to dodge them and whatever else. And
people don't care, and they feel completely entitled.
Right.
It's your problem if you don't like my crazy kids.
So the fun part of the story is, so I posted on Facebook. So I'm like, "Oh, interesting read." I don't make any comment on it. And one of my friends, who has a, I think, 3-year-old daughter and another baby on the way, goes, "Oh, my God, this is awesome." And he posts it on his Facebook wall. And he's getting mostly positive comments. And then he gets a comment back from somebody who is the wife of someone that we both know. And here's what her response starts with. "First of all, I don't care for the tone of this article." And I'm like, okay, so we've hit a nerve with you. And then she goes on to, "Not all kids are brats." God never said all kids were brats. The title of the article was "Curb Your Brats. If Your Kid Is Misbehaving, Take Care of the Situation." So it just turns into, and that's what happens, is people see one little thing, they get very reactionary toward it, and then they're like, and nothing ever gets solved by it. And now we're, I just want to, coming off of that, I want to mention the thank you and to someone who helps make this show possible by helping us with equipment. That's Huge Entertainment, hugeentertainment.com, hugeentertainment.com. There will be a link to that on the website, which is natedarlingshow.podbean.com for all of you who are downloading it off of iTunes. Also, we're going to have links to all of the stuff we talked about, like the story of the lady who cut off her husband's penis and all this other stuff. That will be mentioned there, so you'll be able to see that. And I like to wrap up every show with a little bit of something that's pissed me off the previous week.
Oh, boy.
Because it hasn't just been this. I mean, I know it sounds like the whole everything in the show has pissed me off this week. It's always some mundane bullshit thing. I needed to buy a new pair of earbuds this week, and I was visiting a friend down in Salinas, and I go to Target because I'm like, fine, I'll go to Target. I'll get some earbuds. No big deal. I walk into Target. You can't get earbuds in Target. They have them, but they've locked them to the peg. So if you wanted to get them, you would have to go find a lovely Target associate and go, can you unlock the earbuds for me? But you can't see them anywhere. So I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Fuck Target. I'm not going to buy them at Target. So I get back here, same day. I'm going to Walmart. I'm getting stuff because I usually, when I go out of town for a couple days, I end up baroning my kitchen before I time it perfectly. So I'm in Walmart and I'm like, all right, I'll pick up my earbuds at Walmart. I go to Walmart, same thing. I'm like, you fuckers.
Well, it's got to be because people are stealing the earbuds, yeah?
Well, I would imagine. But it's still a fucking pain in my ass. Because
your community, Nate.
If you think it's my community, I was
bunch
in Salinas. I was in Salinas, and then I was in West Sac. I mean, which community is this?
The global one.
Yeah, the global fuckers. So, and if you think it's hard to find somebody in a Target to help you, try being in the Walmart electronics department because there's only one poor bastard working there. There's always just one. And if it's not an 800-year-old guy who has no clue where anything is, it's some bro dog who's helping an old person figure out the difference between a Blu-ray and a regular DVD. So you're never getting any help there. So I can't buy any earbuds. And I'm like pissed. I am angry now. So the next day I say, you know what? Fuck it. I'm getting in my car and I ride my bike back and forth to work every day. So I don't normally drive my car unless I'm going out of town or going grocery shopping. I said, fuck it. I'm driving my car and I'm going to drive to Fry's, which for anybody who doesn't live out here, it's an electronics store. I'm driving to Fry's and so help me if those motherfuckers have the earbuds locked up, I am going to be angry because it's ridiculous. I understand if you've got the $150 pair of Dr. Dre Beats locked up, but the fucking gummy earbuds that are $9.99 retail that cost your company 3 cents, fuck you. So anyway, I went to Fry's, and praise God in heaven, Fry's did not have all of their earbuds locked up. But I will say this about Fry's. I find a pair of earbuds. I'm like, all right, these will do. And then I'm like, huh, maybe I'll go over here and look. Because I can't get out of any store without them pissing me off. They have different headphones and earbuds in the iPod section.
Why?
But I don't know. Separate, it's separate, not the same ones, different ones, but there's nothing. If you find the headphones and earbuds in one section, there's no sign there saying, hey, if you're looking for more earbuds, we got them over by the iPods. Motherfuckers!
That does piss me off. I hate when even grocery stores sometimes do that. Put stuff, similar stuff in different places. I am not your psychic friend. Just put everything together.
Right. And so it becomes this big help you find stuff. The worst thing, and Fry's, they're pretty good about helping you find stuff, but they're pseudo on commission, so they're not really pushing stuff, but they're helpful. If somebody helps you, they go, oh, come find me when you're going to ring out.
Oh.
Oh, great. Thanks. And I wouldn't want that job for anything, but that was my saga of trying to buy fucking earbuds. 3 stores, 3 cities, and 200 and some odd miles on my car later, I finally have
a new... Now, did you get the ones at the first location or the second location by the iPods? I'm just curious.
The second location by the iPods, of course.
I just need closure.
That's what made me angry. That's why I got even more angry, because it was a much nicer pair for the same price. And I was like, you cocksuckers. You fucking cocksuckers.
Do you know what would make you feel better right now?
What's that?
A good cry.
Maybe that, or maybe a glass of milk would make me feel better. All right. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Mel for sitting in and helping out.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
I want to thank Larry for trying with all of his might to get back from...
We miss you, Larry.
Larry will be back next time. Next show, what we're going to do is we're going to do it this show, but we're going to do a little backstory on... growing up Nate and growing up Larry and what that's all about. So a lot less anger and a little bit more.
Yeah, don't have me come because then it'll be – it was really pretty angry and traumatic.
Well, there was a lot of shit that happened this week, a lot of dark shit. And you know what? As much as comedy is about laughing about stuff, it's about pointing out how ridiculous shit is. And from really darkness comes humor. So that's – so I'm down with that. So for everybody listening, for all the links, check out natedarlingshow.podbean.com. You can download the show on iTunes if you went to the Podbean site. So subscribe, enjoy, love us, and check out any of the stuff we talked about on the site. And we'll talk to you later. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye. Anthony works in the grocery store, saving his pennies for someday.
sack. Is that all you get for your money? And it seems such a waste of time. If that's what it's all about, mama, if that's moving up, then I'm moving out. I'm moving out.